Welcome to another CineStories podcast. I'm your host, Brian Dick.
Before we get into my conversation with Meg LaFauve, a bit of business.
First, we're now accepting submissions for our first ever TV digital retreat that will be held in Idyllwild, California in the spring of 2016. Early deadline is June 1st, but we'll be accepting submissions into the fall. Second, this is CineStories' 20th anniversary. In an effort to financially assist writers who earn invitations to our retreats, we've launched a 20 for 20 fundraising campaign where we're asking everyone who has enjoyed a positive CineStory experience to donate just $20. Hopefully that's not too painful, especially since we're a 501c3, making all donations tax deductible. For more information about either the TV digital retreat or the 20 for 20 fundraising campaign, please visit our website, cinestory.org. Now, on to the podcast.
My guest today is Meg LaFauve, a writer of Inside Out, the next amazing film to come from Pixar Animation. It's being released this Friday, June 19th. Along with being a CineStory board member, Meg has been a staple at our feature retreat for over a decade, so we couldn't be more excited for her and the success she has seen transitioning from being a producer and president of Egg Pictures to screenwriter. During this busy week, she carved out some time to talk with me at the Writers Guild Foundation offices. Enjoy the podcast.
I don't even know how you got how you started with CineStory, or when you were introduced with.
Gosh, a long time ago. Pam Pierce, I was working as a creative executive at Egg Pictures, Jodie's company, yeah. Jodie Foster's company, and she called me to come to the when CineStory was in Chicago, and it was very different. It was a lot of, anybody could come, open to the public, I think, and it was just panels in different rooms, and you would move from room to room doing different panels, and the crowd would move from room to room. So it was very, very different than the intimate experience that CineStory is now.
And you had no idea at that time what it was or what it was going to be like?
No, I just landed and did it. And it was super fun, and Pam was great. And then another year I did it in Chicago. We all went to the Chicago Critics Awards, and the writer of Usual Suspects was there, Christopher McQuarrie. And in the middle of the Film Critics Award, a woman comes over and goes, "Excuse me, you work for Jodie Foster, right?" And I was like, "Yes." She's like, "Okay, Sharon Stone can't be here to give Sherry Lansing her award, her honorary award, so we'd like you to do it." And I was like, "Wow, that is so far 6 degrees of separation. Like, I am not Jodie Foster. I am just a lowly executive." And so they hand me a speech, and Christopher McQuarrie starts rewriting it. It was crazy. It was just crazy. I mean, but we had a lot of fun. I mean, we had a lot of fun. You know, that's for the mentors, the people when we go to CineStory. We, of course, love meeting new writers, hearing new voices, helping support those voices get out in the world. That's the most gratifying. Then another really gratifying thing is meeting the other mentors and hearing their stories and what they've gone through and their knowledge of the business and their knowledge of writing. I love that part because you remember, you like, sometimes it's remembering something you knew, and sometimes it's very illuminating for me too, and I learned something at CineStory too.
Now, when did you get the first sort of entertainment bug? Do you remember?
The first entertainment bug?
Yeah, oh. Or when you knew you wanted to write or produce.
I was writing since I was a little girl. I think my very first story was like second grade, and it was about getting on an airplane and falling into a hole in the seat. The end. Somebody should have noticed that.
You could produce that and put it up on Vine.
Hey,
it seems like
it's just like what I don't talk about the other world I went to. Nothing. Yeah. I always wanted to write. I always loved stories. I was a huge reader as a kid. And then I fell in love with movies. I didn't start as a writer, though. I started as a producer. Well, first I started in advertising. Then I became an executive. And then I was a producer. And then I realized I need to do what I love, which is what I came to LA to do, which is be a writer. Because if I don't do it now, I may never do it. So I kind of jumped off the cliff, left a job that everybody in Hollywood would want to have, working with an amazing storyteller herself. I consider Jodie my story mentor. Taught me everything I know. And then just, you know, did what everybody does and wrote all those scripts that no one will ever see. Because, you know, I could develop at a very high level because I'd been working for 10 years in the industry and I'd work with incredible writers, and Jody had taught me so much about the storytelling process and stories as film. But to write it and execute it is a totally different part of your brain. So I had to do all those horrible drafts and learn.
But there must be some skills that you've taken from your years there.
I certainly understood. Again, I understood a lot of things. I understood what actors need in a scene. I understood from being in editing rooms the rhythm of a movie coming in and out of a scene. I understood how thematic has to evolve and be moving in every scene. I learned from Jane Anderson, an amazing writer and director, when I worked with her, you know, that she would say the theme is the DNA of every scene, and if it's not, why is that scene in your movie? So I learned from all of those amazing creative people a lot of things, but doing it is different, you know. But you know, even working now as a writer, and I still learn it over and over. You know, every time you open a blank piece of paper, some part of you feels like, oh no, I don't know what I'm doing. Right. That's right, no, because it's so new.
I had that same feeling this morning.
Yeah, I did too this morning. You know, and when that scene just won't work, because you want it to do 10 things and it only wants to do 5, or, I mean, it is a constant process of challenging yourself, like, can I do this, and who is the character, and why is she here, and what does she want, and what is her mask, and, you know, it's just all that intellectual stuff that you need to think about, but then you actually have to forget it and just see what comes. It's, for me, personally, that's how I write. Like, I will think through all of those things, and I might do a very loose outline or card, you know, card it up on the wall. Certainly at Pixar we carded a lot, so I learned a lot about carding. But then I just have to let it go and see what comes, and then tear it all down again, write it again, tear it all down again, write it again, tear it down. You know, it's just a constant process of that churn of, and even though my brain knows that this is going to churn through many, many versions and many drafts, I still, this morning, was like, I can't leave this scene because it doesn't work. Ugh, drives me crazy. Just write. That's what I love about writing too, is that it doesn't really matter what level you're at on some point. At some point, it's just bravery to say, I don't know, but I'm going to keep going. It doesn't matter how much experience you have.
Well, when did you start writing? I mean, were you, you said you were writing as a kid, but when did you start writing screenplays? Were you doing that when you were in advertising, and then were you still writing when you were working at Egg Pictures?
I was doing a little bit of writing and advertising, but it was really that kind of hobby, you know, to the side, and then write 3 pages and say, this sucks, and putting it away. I really started writing more when I was an executive. That critic in my head who understood screenplays was way too sharp and critical. So every time I tried to write a screenplay, I'd get like 2 pages in and be like, oh, this is terrible. I mean, there's absolutely nothing here. I mean, why are you doing that? That voice just goes so harsh in my head that I decided I would just write other forms for a while. So I wrote a play, and I wrote a novel, and I went to a short story class at UCLA, which I love. So I did things that critic didn't think it knew, just to have the experience of fun and enjoying writing, and that wonderful experience where you're seeing a moment in a story and all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, he's got a gun. I didn't even know he had a gun. You know, that's just the fun of writing, right? Is that dream that you can get into. So I let myself do that for a long time, kind of on the side, until I was ready to jump off and, okay, now I'm going to take the time and write all those bad scripts.
And so what was your first bad script? Your first script that you wrote?
Oh, I wrote a script about a woman who's haunted by her mother.
Light comedy?
Yes. No, it was a comedy. A black comedy, because her mother's claiming she's dead, but her mother was really dramatic anyway, so she doesn't think her mother was dead. She thinks she's just here to bug her continue to bug her. But it just had all the, you know, normal problems you have in the early script.
Right.
I wrote lots of drafts of it, too. I don't mean like I wrote a single draft of a script and put it away. I wrote many drafts of a script and then would say, okay, I'm clearly not ready to write this. And I'd go on to another idea and write many drafts of that script. And again, it was just cutting my teeth. And then I was really lucky. And then I had a writing partner for a while, John Morgan, who was an indie film director. And he had a story he wanted to tell that was very close to him, and he really needed somebody, because it was autobiographical, to come in and write with him to kind of help get him some distance and fictionalize it. And we were very lucky, and that script went to the Sundance Lab. So suddenly I was in the reverse position, right? I was getting notes, not giving notes. So then I had to learn to get notes. We walked out of one session, and John looked at me and said, "You look like a clubbed baby seal." I was like, "I know, right? Jeez." And then the next session, he looked like a clubbed baby seal. But he really helped me, too, because he comes from acting. And so he was very used to improv. He was very used to play. So every time my development brain would say, "Okay, listen, John, there is just no reason to do that, because I can tell you what the cul-de-sac of that idea is. Why should we write it?" And he would say, "Meg, because if we go down the cul-de-sac, we might just find a piece that we need to come back with, out of the cul-de-sac with. So let's just go down and explore." And I'd be like, "Okay." So he really taught me to kind of let it go and play and not let that intellect shut it down all the time, which was great training for Pixar, because it is a lot of that. It is a lot of, let's try it. You know, they're artists, so they sketch. And
I would feel, because it's animation, that they would need to be much more regimented because of what you create, that you can't be really willy-nilly with.
Well, certainly once it goes into animation or even layout, we're not writing, right? So I would love to go through the process of watching the animators do their amazing work and all they bring to it, but I'm long gone. You really shouldn't be writing an animation, like you said, because it's going. So, but there's a development process. But the wonderful thing is you're working with storyboard artists. And that was one of my favorite parts of working in animation, is working with storyboard artists. Because they are amazing artists, they're amazing storytellers, and they're amazing writers in that they are actualizing the sequence.
Right.
And they can throw in ideas, they can elevate the work. So it's a very collaborative experience in like television in that way. So I love that part of it.
What script got you noticed with them, with Pixar?
Well, it's funny. It was kind of a circuitous route, as the way things are in life. John and I wrote the script we went to Sundance with.
What's that?
It's called The Kavanaughs, based on an experience in his life. And it got noticed by a development person at Pixar. And we went up and met on a movie that was going there. And it came down to us and another team. And I was told one of the reasons we didn't get it is because we didn't really have a comedy sample, because The Kavanaughs was very dramatic. And I was so mad, because I loved Pixar. I was taken to the room where the brain trust was. And they explained to me that a brain trust is all these directors of all these amazing Pixar movies come together and look at your work and give you notes. And I thought, that is the scariest thing and the most amazing thing I can think of experiencing. Meaning, I'm a story junkie, and if I really want to tell great stories, then you're going to have to be around the greatest storytellers that you can find.
Right.
Well, in my opinion, that was the people at Pixar. So I literally was like, how do I get into that room? How do I get into that room? I have to be in that room. So it kind of put it out as a beacon, really, on the horizon. So, but we didn't get the job. So I put it as a beacon, and then I just started, you know, putting my nose down and doing my work as a writer. But I was kind of mad about the no comedy thing. I mean, for myself.
Right.
Not at Pixar, but just at myself.
Yeah.
So I went home, and I had had an idea rolling around in my head, but I just knew there were two characters, and I kind of knew the beginning, and I kind of knew the end, and that's all I had. And I just was like, I'm writing it. And I wrote it in 10 days. I just went, and I just wrote it, trying to be funny. And it was pretty funny. And it's interesting, because I had, even up to that point, had people doubting I was really a writer, because I had a writer-director as my partner, and he's amazing. So I think there was some question of, well, are you really doing it, or are you just producing and giving him notes, and are you really writing?
Hollywood loves its labels, don't they?
Right. So it's kind of a crucible for me, because then when I wrote this script on my own, it was like, oh, Meg, you are a writer. Like, right here you are. That script, it wouldn't be a great story if I said, and that script got me the next job. Oh. No, because that's not how life works. That script didn't get me the next job, but that script got me a job rewriting a Warner Brothers comedy, drama comedy. And And, you know, so this is years of work, right? Like, so that comedy goes out, and then the Warner Brothers job, and that is a good snippet amount of time. But then that Warner script gets me interest at Pixar.
Right.
So, you know, even though I felt like I was going sideways or backwards from my goal of this beacon of working at Pixar, I just kept trusting that if I'm really trying to apply myself to my craft and be the best storyteller I can, that, you know, that's going to get me there, even if it isn't, like, why is working at Warner Brothers going to get me to Pixar?
Right.
It did. So it's fun, because I did get in that room. I did get in that brain trust room, both as somebody at the table giving notes and as somebody at the table getting them, which, you know, like anywhere, it's always more fun to give them.
Right.
But it was great to get them, because to have been struggling through what the story struggle, that's any struggle when you're trying to put together a story, and then have these fresh, amazing brains come and say, well, did you think about this, and how about this, and what about that, and start spitballing ideas.
Right.
Oh, my God, there's nothing better.
Now, when they brought you on for Inside Out, who was already on the team?
Well, they were a year and a half or so in, maybe even 2 years. I'm not quite sure. So Pete had already put a lot of the groundwork down. They had designed and decided on their main emotions, and Riley, and a lot of the places they were going to visit. When I came in, they had just had fear and joy as the main relationship. And Pete jokes because his experience of being an adolescent was mostly fear. And mine too, by the way.
All writers operate out of fear, right?
But Pete tells a wonderful story about just feeling like it wasn't working. And it wasn't quite the movie he wanted. And that he took a walk and realized on that walk that really what connected him to people was sadness. And experiencing something together that isn't always just about being happy together. So when I came on, he had literally just reached that idea of let's change this over to sadness. So I worked with him and Ronnie Del Carmen, the co-director, who's a genius, and Josh Cooley, who is the head of story and also an amazing writer, just one of the funniest guys I've ever met. The four of us sat in a room and then figured out, okay, then what is the story? If it's sadness, and we know we wanted them to go to certain kinds of places in the mind, and there were memory balls. I believe that we came up with the idea of core memories, and it was really a lot of what's at stake. That was a lot of work of what is at stake here. How do you show that in the mind, right? Because it's certainly the love of Riley, but how do you show her losing her in the mind? What does that look like? It can't be an intellectual idea, right? It has to be emotional.
Right.
And the personality islands was a big breakthrough, I think. And those carrying those core memories and losing her. And I'd say the other big challenge that Pete talks about, and for sure we went through, was, you know, Joy's a tough character because incessantly happy people are annoying, right? She can go annoying in like a flat second.
Right.
And it was really trying to keep her vulnerable, really trying to show that, yes, her modus operandi is to say, yes, we can, let's do it, you know? But, and to be happy is her goal. But her vulnerability is sometimes she doesn't know. Sometimes she doesn't know how to get there. Sometimes she feels like she's losing. Sometimes she is losing. Sometimes she is failing. And to let her have all of those shades of her character. And the same, you know, sadness has to be many shades of sadness.
Right.
And different, and all of those emotions can't be singular. And then, you know, you bring in Amy Poehler, and the whole thing just rises into the stratosphere. You know, it's just, what an amazing person to work with. She was amazing.
Did you guys have the actors? Did you know who the actors were? What were going to play?
Some of them, when I came on, Amy Poehler came on while we were writing Joy, and one of my best, happiest memories now of mine. I'm not going to say one of my core memories, but one of my happiest, golden memories was we flew to New York to work with Amy. Because she's an amazing writer and comic herself. And
right.
Just sitting in a room, she was so generous. She like laughed when my jokes weren't funny. Right? You know, she's such a good person.
She seems like somebody who just wants to laugh, right?
She was so generous and so full of amazing ideas and so fast.
Yeah.
And then we recorded with her the next day, and that was also a treat to watch her in action. So it's also wonderful when the character that you're building, you find the right person to be there,
right.
That character.
So you were there when she was recording the dialogue.
Yeah, not every time.
Right.
I did move off of Inside Out towards the end to work on a different Pixar movie, but for that very first one I was, and it was super fun.
Were you the only animation rookie that was on the team?
I think I was, and I don't know for sure. But from what I know,
yeah,
I really had no idea what was happening when I first got there. Because, you know, there were already crewed up.
Right.
So things were being built, as they say. Locations were being scouted and characters were being designed. And it was, thank God I didn't understand that, actually. I think it's better that I didn't understand how many people were waiting for pages and to make this story go. So, because I could just be slightly ignorant and innocent of it.
You look at the history of Pixar, and then you step into to be part of that.
Oh my God, it was crazy.
Did you feel like an extra pressure?
Oh, I can't tell you how many cab rides, because I was living in a hotel while I was there, because I'd fly from LA. How many cab rides? I was like, yep, this might be my last day, because this is really hard. And the bar is so high. And I came home after being a week up there, and I remember I laid on the living room floor at home, saying to Joe, my husband, I don't think I can do it. The bar is too high. And, oh, my God, you have to get so vulnerable. And, you just have to be so real and honest. And how are we going to do it? I just don't think I can do it. This is too hard. And he said to me, Meg, why did you think when you got to the major leagues it would get easier? And I was like, oh, yeah, right. Right. This is why they're so good. Because the bar's high. Because everybody is so willing to be vulnerable and authentic in the room. And everybody is trying to do their best work. And it's not just me. It's not just every storyboard artist is doing the same. I'm sure everybody in every department is doing that level of work, meaning that level of effort, that right. level of heart that's being put in.
So it almost sounds like a psychiatry session where you're revealing your innermost thoughts so that it can be used to...
Well, there's a lot of personal stuff, right? Because that's the most powerful stuff is when you put your own heart on the page, you know? I was an 11-year-old girl. I was an 11-year-old girl who... I understood what Pete was trying to say. I could emotionally connect to it, so I felt I could write it. You know, I was an 11-year-old girl who felt like my parents always wanted me to be happy. There were five of us. That's a lot.
Yeah.
You know? So I understood what Riley's saying at the end of the movie to her parents. So I think that, I think that's important that everybody can. And if you're doing something universally human about the human condition of what it's like to be here, it should, your personal experience will touch everybody because everybody will get it, right? So, I wouldn't say it's therapy. I mean, people might. He's me that I'm trying to make it therapy, but it's more about being creatively authentic.
It's one of those concepts too that when it was announced, it was kind of like a slap the forehead of why hasn't anyone done this before? And then you're like, thank God no one has, because Pixar is the one doing
Pixar and Pete Docter. Right. The Pete Docter is the creative genius that could do it. He's an amazing person, amazing creative person, and that he really knew what he wanted, It was just trying to help him get there and execute, how does that execute out? And he is, he's a writer, and so it was working with him as a writer, too, not just as a director. So, I know, isn't it? You're like, why didn't somebody do this 20 years ago? Thank goodness they didn't.
Well, I mean, it's the same thing with Toy Story, right? It's like, of course the toys come to life.
I know, right? Duh. I know. And then you're like, wait, what's the next one? Right. What is the next one?
I did want to talk to you, and this is going back to CineStory, because I remember when I was there in 2011, I had you gave the orientation. And I remember you talking about you say pick out your three movies.
Mm-hmm.
The first ones that come to your mind, and mine were Fearless, Pulp Fiction, and The Muppet Movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then you started breaking down about you're going to see that theme in your writing, and I was like, no, that can't be right, because I felt like those were so different from one another.
Know.
And then I realized they absolutely have a lot of the same themes. And that almost those same themes play in everything that I write. Have you found, do you know what your theme is, or what your themes are?
Yeah. And my movies, when I was thinking about that, were crazy. It was like Toy Story, Blue, and and Somewhere in Time. I didn't say that they'd be good movies.
Right.
They just have to be movies that emotionally get you every time. That is the craziest group of soup of movies.
You presented it as you would, if you come across it on the television, you stop automatically,
right.
and you have to sit down and watch it.
And yeah, I think that my theme is. There's the engine going by right when I'm talking about my theme. That is perfect timing.
Yeah, is that a sign?
I have an emergency theme. and it's just sitting outside the window. My thematic is often about feeling isolated or not part of a group. And loss is often very involved in the theme somewhere. So that seems to be what comes up over and over again.
But I thank you for your time. And I appreciate that we could sit down and do this. And hopefully we'll see you back up at Cinestory soon. Awesome.
No, but yes, I will be there.
In 2019.
Sometime, I'm coming. I love it. It's my favorite thing to do.
Good. And we love having you. So.
Good.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.